ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
On August 6, 1989, 13-year-old Alyssa Roberson left her home in Aransas Pass, Texas, to meet a friend at a nearby elementary school. It was a walk she had made before and should have taken only a few minutes. But Alyssa never arrived, prompting her family to report her missing that night. A wide-scale search began the following morning, and bloodhounds tracked Alyssa's scent to a nearby intersection where it abruptly ended, leading investigators to believe she had been abducted. But more than 37 years later, Alyssa has never been found, and what happened to her remains a mystery. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. All right, so Alyssa Roberson, different name, similar set of circumstances. Unfortunately, we have discussed many cases where someone, usually a child, is only minutes away from their home and vanishes without a trace. In this case, we do have a potential scent at an intersection, but that's about it. And it always brings me back to the most basic recommendation that I have, not only for children, but also for adults. We live in a world now where, unfortunately, no matter where you live, no matter how close you are to home, no matter how safe you feel, you're better off traveling in packs, at least two people. Whether that's going for a walk or a jog in your neighborhood or taking a quick run to the local store, if you have the ability to have someone with you, you should always do it. And I really hate the fact that in 2026, especially as a father, that I have to sit here and tell you guys that, because it's not right. We shouldn't have to live in a world where we have to think about those things. And yet, here we are. And I'm not telling you guys anything you don't already know, but most of the time, we may not solve these cases, but we can learn from them. These are tragedies that most of these families never expected to experience, and yet here they are telling their stories, trying to let everyone know not only what happened to their loved one, but what we should all be aware of as we go throughout life on a daily basis. And speaking of family, I'm happy to report that we were able to work with Alyssa's sister Ruby on this episode, so thank you to her for allowing us to tell your sister's story and for being part of this to make sure that it's as accurate as possible. So if that there is a chance to solve this, anybody out there listening or watching will have the most up-to-date information. And we do have a lot to cover, so let's dive into this week's case. Blanca Alyssa Roberson, who went by Alyssa, was born on January 12, 1976 in Nicaragua to her mother Marina. During a period of intense civil unrest, her biological father traveled to Costa Rica looking for work and mysteriously disappeared, leaving Marina to raise Alyssa alone. When Alyssa was approximately 8 months old, Marina was working at a restaurant where she met Eugene Roberson, a commercial shrimper from the South Texas community of Aransas Pass, and who also spoke Spanish, which was important because Marina did not speak English. Marina showed him around the area, and before he left, Eugene told her that he wanted to marry her and bring her and Alyssa back to Texas. Marina agreed, and she and Alyssa immigrated to Aransas Pass, and eventually Eugene actually adopted Alyssa. Less than a year later, Marina and Eugene welcomed a daughter named Ruby, who I already mentioned worked with us on this episode, and they later had a son named Tony as well. As the oldest, Alyssa naturally took on the role of second mother to her younger siblings, making sure they listened to Marina and stayed out of trouble. Because Marina didn't speak English, Alyssa also became the family translator, helping at doctor's appointments, grocery stores, and anywhere else communication was a challenge. Marina said, quote, "She was a blessing for the whole family. She was like the soul of the home." Since English wasn't Alyssa's first language, the local schools held her back a grade, and as a result, she and Ruby started school together, spending nearly all of their time with one another and sharing the same friends. Ruby described herself as a tag-along sister who looked up to Alyssa because she was cool. The two spent countless hours riding bikes, playing Mario Brothers on Nintendo, and watching MTV. Music became a huge part of their childhood. Ruby fondly remembered singing Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer into hairbrushes and listening to cassette tapes on a boombox until they knew every lyric by heart. However, life changed when Marina and Eugene divorced. Marina then raised her three children on her own before eventually meeting a man named Ralph. They started dating in 1984, and they welcomed a son named Alex. But the relationship with Ralph quickly turned abusive. Marina learned that he was a drug mule for criminal cartels. He came and went unpredictably, and whenever he was around, he was physically abusive to Marina and terrorized the children. Music and laughter became the siblings' escape. When Ralph returned and made life at home unbearable, they would ride their bikes or disappear into music as a way to cope with the trauma. Marina repeatedly tried to get Ralph out of their lives, but he kept coming back. She had no car, spoke very little English, and had no resources available to help her leave. She also believed she couldn't turn to law enforcement because Ralph claimed to have people on the inside, and despite openly breaking the law and having cartel ties, he never seemed to face consequences. Marina even sent anonymous letters to the police reporting Ralph's criminal activity, hoping he'd get arrested and the family would be safe, but somehow he always learned about him. He threatened Marina, saying he would do something she would, quote, always remember him by, and that would, quote, haunt her for the rest of her life. So Marina was left trying to protect herself and her four children on her own. By the summer of 1989, they were living in a home near the intersection of Goodnight Avenue and Whitney Street in Aransas Pass, just blocks from the ocean. Alyssa was 13 years old, Ruby was 11, and the two remained as close as ever. But Ralph, he was still a constant concern. That July, Alyssa told her mother repeatedly that an unfamiliar vehicle had been following her. She said it would trail behind her as she walked, stop when she stopped, and speed up when she did. And so, as you might imagine, the family was on high alert, believing that Ralph might try to kidnap the youngest child, Alex. Then on Saturday, August 5th, Alyssa asked Marina if she could spend the night with her friend Sharla. Marina agreed, but only because Sharla lived nearby. And so she slept over, and then she spent the day on August 6th with Sharla as well. She also planned to go to evening church service with Sharla, but at approximately 5:30 p.m., Alyssa returned home instead. Now, I don't know why she came home. All we know is that she never went to the church, and she arrived at approximately 5:30 p.m. at her house. Around that same time, her friend Debbie called and asked if she wanted to come over. Alyssa asked Marina for permission, but Marina initially said no because Debbie lived too far away for Alyssa to walk there alone. Debbie then suggested that they meet at a local elementary school, which was only about a 6-minute walk from Alyssa's house. She also told Alyssa that her father Bob could drive her home afterward, and Alyssa really wanted to go. So even though Marina initially said no, like it usually happens, right? They give you those puppy dog eyes, you feel bad, you feel guilty, and eventually you cave. And that's exactly what Marina did. She eventually agreed to let her go, and this is a decision that would haunt her. At approximately 5:45 p.m., Alyssa left her house wearing a light blue Mickey Mouse Florida t-shirt and blue shorts. She planned to walk to the school, meet up with Debbie, and then the two of them would make the approximately 10-minute walk to Debbie's house. But Alyssa never arrived at the school. At some point after Alyssa left, Debbie called and asked whether Alyssa was on her way yet, and she said that she had gone to the school, but Alyssa wasn't there. Ruby told her that Alyssa had already left and should have arrived by then, so Debbie said she would check at the school again in case Alyssa was waiting somewhere else. When Ruby told Marina what was going on, she immediately became concerned and started shouting from the kitchen, "Alyssa should be with you right now." They waited for Debbie to call back, and when she did, she said Alyssa still wasn't at the school. Debbie told them that once her father got home, they would drive around and look for her. Ruby immediately started calling around to Alyssa's friends, but none of them had seen or heard from her. So Ruby reached out to a few neighbors and learned that the elderly couple living next door, the Barkers, had actually seen Alyssa leave the house at approximately 5:45 p.m., but they didn't see her after that. Ruby also spoke with the Pierce household on the corner of Whitney and Goodnight Avenue, and three people from the home were outside at the time when Alyssa was seen passing by their house. But after the Pierces, no one else reported seeing Alyssa. Meanwhile, Debbie and her dad Bob drove around searching for Alyssa to no avail. After nightfall, Bob stopped by Alyssa's home to see if she had been found, and when he learned that she was still missing, he told the family they needed to call 911. So at approximately 9:49 p.m., Ruby did just that. Officer Walter Winkle responded to the home and took the initial report. He told Marina he believed Alyssa would turn up and had probably gotten distracted while spending time with friends. He then drove around the surrounding area for a few minutes, but that was the extent of the search that night. Winkle then classified Alyssa as a runaway. However, he never notified the detective responsible for juvenile cases, Lieutenant Linda Thompson, even though that was department policy. Instead, the report was placed into Thompson's inbox, where it remained until the following morning. As a result, no one in law enforcement truly searched for Alyssa that night. I don't need to tell you guys this by now. We've all heard the story before. That's a big mistake. The first few hours are critical. And to lose the entire night, where you could have set up roadblocks, you could be talking to people, you could be canvassing the area, and at that point, if she's still on foot, she probably wouldn't have gotten that far. But instead, law enforcement is pretty much inactive, and we're talking about 8 to 12 hours. May not seem like a lot, but again, as you all know by now, 2 hours can be the difference between life and death. And so, 12, it's an eternity. And so essentially, law enforcement went to sleep that night. And as you might imagine, Marina didn't sleep for a second. The next morning, she walked Ruby and her younger sons to the police station to find out what investigators were doing and whether Alyssa had been found. Obviously, she hadn't. Lieutenant Linda Thompson soon arrived for work and immediately recognized Marina and her children. They had interacted regularly over the years, and Thompson knew Alyssa was almost always with Marina helping to translate. Seeing Marina without Alyssa immediately raised concerns for Lieutenant Thompson, and she later described that moment as, quote, being kicked by a mule. Thompson found Alyssa's missing persons report in her inbox and immediately began organizing a search. But by then, investigators were more than 12 hours behind. Thompson later said, quote, "I hate that that happened, but it did. I firmly believe had we started that night when the call came in, it would have been a different scenario. I think we might have been able to find Alyssa and solve the case." And for anybody who's watching on video, I want to stop for a second and throw up a map on the screen. You can see it here now. And essentially, we have four locations that are labeled. We have the Roberson residence. We have the Key Berger Elementary School. I hope I'm saying that right. It might be Kai Berger. And then we also have Debbie Green's residence, and we have Charlotte West's residence as well. So these locations, relatively close, like I had said, in total, like a 10 to 15 minute walk to Debbie's house, and you can see all the locations where they are, and it's a residential area. There's a lot around there, a lot of houses, a lot of residents, so a lot of different scenarios at play when I look at this overview of this map, and I'm sure you're thinking the same thing. How many people live in that area? How many people could have encountered Alyssa on her way to the school? And police were thinking the same thing, so investigators began canvassing the neighborhood and later learned that Alyssa had last been seen at the corner of Whitney and Goodnight. The investigation then quickly expanded into a large-scale search involving search and rescue teams, foot searchers, cadaver dogs, and helicopters. And when speaking to Ruby about the search, she still remembers it, and she described the scene as chaos and pandemonium, so clearly things weren't going smoothly, and there was definitely a sense of urgency to find Alyssa as quick as possible. The family joined the searches as well, and in fact, her father Eugene was working aboard a shrimp boat in Freeport when he learned that Alyssa was missing, but as soon as he received the news, he returned to Aransas Pass and joined the search as well. Bloodhounds were eventually brought in, and they were able to pick up Alyssa's scent at the family home, and they followed it past the elementary school to the intersection of 8th Street and Goodnight Avenue. But once they got there, the trail abruptly ended. And we still have more to talk about, including the struggles in the investigation, the allegations that were made, family members that became suspects, and ultimately where we stand now. We're going to talk about it right after the break. Ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable? The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep, and that's why I switched to Miracle Made Sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. So whether you're a hot sleeper, cold sleeper, it does not matter. These sheets will help keep you in the comfort zone so you can have a great night's rest. And thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle Made Sheets stay cleaner and fresher up to 3 times longer than regular sheets. That means fewer odors, fewer wash cycles, and way less laundry, and who doesn't want that? And the most important part, and I've mentioned this numerous times, it doesn't matter what features or tricks the sheets have. If at the end of the day they're not comfortable, you're not going to use them. And I'm happy to report these sheets are awesome. I absolutely love them, and they feel just as good, if not better, than sheets that I've slept on in 5-star hotels, but without the steep price tag, right? So they're smooth, they're breathable, and they're ridiculously comfortable. They're also great for your skin. All that hidden bacteria that you find in regular sheets, we know by now it's going to clog your pores, it's going to cause breakouts. None of us are looking for that, especially if I got to come here and talk to you guys. I don't want my face all covered, right? I don't think you want that either. But with Miracle Made's antibacterial design, it helps you sleep cleaner and clearer night after night. So upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest by going to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%, and when you use my promo code DETECTIVE, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with their 30-day money-back guarantee, there's absolutely no risk. That's trymiracle.com/detective at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. All right, so we're back. And when I left off, I was talking about the bloodhounds that were able to pick up Alyssa's scent, and they followed it past the elementary school to this intersection of 8th and Goodnight Avenue. And then the scent just goes cold. Investigators found no signs of struggle, discarded belongings, or anything else indicating what had happened at that intersection. They also spoke with the people in the area, but no one reported hearing screams or seeing anything suspicious. And so based on those findings, investigators theorized that Alyssa willingly got into a vehicle driven by someone she knew and trusted before being abducted. And sure, that's a possibility. The fact that you don't have any signs of struggle, the fact that nobody heard or saw anything, very strong possibility that she got in willingly, and that's why you don't have those things. It's also possible someone got the jump on her, right? And we're going to talk about that in the perspective, but just because we don't have signs of a struggle, it doesn't mean that there wasn't one, or doesn't mean that the perpetrator just in that particular circumstance got her before she had a chance to react. And so I wouldn't put too much stock into the notion that she got into a vehicle driven by someone she knew when, as I sit here right now, 37 years later, we don't even know for sure if she got into a car at all. Marina told investigators that she firmly believed that Ralph was responsible for Alyssa's disappearance and abduction. In her heart and mind, she believed that he had carried out the threat that he had made to try and hurt her. The family urged investigators to look into Ralph, and they were eventually told that he had been incarcerated in a Mexican prison when Alyssa disappeared, leading investigators to rule him out. Official records showed that Ralph had been in custody since May 5th, but Marina and Ruby have always questioned that timeline. Both vividly remember seeing him around Arantes Pass in the weeks leading up to Alyssa's disappearance, a time when the family was already living in constant fear. The family also knew that the prison where Ralph was being held had a reputation for drug cartel activity, and on top of that, Ralph's brother worked as a prison guard there as well. So because of this, they believed it was possible Ralph was officially incarcerated, but somehow able to leave the prison, whether it was through corruption or bribery. Somehow he was able to get out of there and go out and do what he needed to do while it's still looking like he was behind bars. They also point to another detail that they personally find suspicious. Despite records indicating Ralph was in jail when Alyssa disappeared, he vanished afterward. According to the family, no one was able to locate him for questioning. And so here you have the suspicions of corruption and the allegations that maybe there was something going on that allowed Ralph to leave the prison undetected. And I see where they're coming from, right? You have this person who's made threats in the past, and all of a sudden they just disappear. And you can't help but wonder, could it be connected to Alyssa's case? On the other hand, if we're to believe Marina, we also know that Ralph was involved in some pretty serious stuff. So his disappearance could be unrelated to Alyssa's case, and it may have something to do with some of his other activity. Investigators also looked into Bob, Debbie's father. Alyssa knew him, trusted him, and was supposed to spend the evening at his house. Since he wasn't home when Debbie initially went to meet Alyssa, investigators considered him a possible suspect and interviewed him multiple times. Bob consistently denied any involvement in Alyssa's disappearance. Investigators never publicly ruled him out, but they never identified him as a suspect or person of interest either. In fact, no one has ever publicly been named a suspect or person of interest in Alyssa's case. As the police investigation continued, Eugene began conducting his own unofficial investigation. Because he was white but fluent in Spanish, he spent time in local bars listening to conversations and hoped someone would reveal information about Alyssa's disappearance. He even tracked down a dangerous drug ranch and on one other occasion confronted a potential suspect inside a bar bathroom demanding answers. But despite his and everyone else's efforts, there was no sign of Alyssa anywhere. As time passed, the physical search came to an end, but the impact on the family never did. Eugene eventually moved to Alaska and just completely isolated himself. I understand. I get it. I don't know what I would do in that situation, but I could tell you that you wouldn't want to be around me, so maybe he felt it was better for everyone to just get as far away as possible to try and numb the pain by not being near anything that would remind him of his daughter. And to make matters even worse, Marina blamed herself for what had happened. She also lived in constant fear that Ralph would return and take another one of her children. So as a result, she became extremely protective and rarely let her children out of her sight. The investigation remained open, and approximately 3 years after Alyssa disappeared, Ralph returned to the area. Fearing he might come back to finish the job, Marina sought help from a bishop and his wife who were serving at a local mission. The church quietly arranged for the family to leave in the middle of the night, and with only a few small suitcases, they relocated to Idaho and effectively went into hiding. The family remained there for years and did not publicly reveal where they were living. Meanwhile, Ralph disappeared from Arantes Pass again. Believed to have used multiple aliases, he has never been located. By August of 1994, 5 years had passed since Alyssa disappeared. By then, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children had created an age-progressed image showing what Alyssa might look like at 18 years old, which was distributed to millions of homes across the country. Investigators told the media they had followed countless leads, including reported sightings in multiple states, but none of them led to Alyssa. They continued to believe that she had been abducted and that foul play was involved. They also said they did not believe Alyssa was a runaway or that her family was responsible for her disappearance. After the five-year mark, the investigation went cold, and Alyssa's story was rarely covered in the media. Then in 2016, the case took an unexpected turn. According to the family, Alyssa's childhood friend, Debbie, the one she was supposed to meet up with the day she disappeared, led a coordinated online harassment campaign accusing Marina of abusing Alyssa, murdering her inside the family home, and then burying her beneath the concrete on the property. Those allegations prompted investigators to search Alyssa's childhood home using cadaver dogs, ground-penetrating radar, and backhoes. And after the search, investigators announced that they had found new evidence. However, they declined to say what it was, stating only that additional searches were needed. Understandably, Ruby and Marina asked investigators for more information, but were given none. Instead, they were brought to the Aransas Pass Police Department for questioning. Investigators then accused Marina of hiding from them by moving away and suggested that she was involved in Alyssa's disappearance. Marina strongly denied those allegations. Alyssa's family was stunned by what investigators were now suggesting. Law enforcement knew Alyssa had left the house that evening. Multiple witnesses saw her walking away. Bloodhounds tracked her scent from the house to an intersection where it abruptly ended. For decades, investigators had treated the case as a non-family abduction. Now, years later, the family found themselves under suspicion, and the accusations were deeply painful to the family. And as a result, they withdrew, and they stopped publicly speaking about Alyssa's case for years. But eventually, they connected with a former private investigator named Richard Norgaard and advocacy organizations, including Light the Way Missing Persons Advocacy Project. With their support, the family began pushing investigators to complete the search of the home, clear the family's name, and bring renewed attention to Alyssa's disappearance. In September of 2024, the family shared their story with Dateline, including what happened during the 2016 investigation. Ruby said, quote, "We're still, as we speak, still processing what happened to us. We're fighting for answers for Alyssa, to find her, or to find justice for her. But we're also fighting the accusations that the police department has put up." The Aransas Pass Chief of Police also spoke with Dateline but declined to address the accusations against the family. Instead, he said investigators now believed it was likely Alyssa had been murdered. He stated, quote, "I think with the time that has elapsed, it's very unusual that you see missing persons don't at some point, you know, after 35 years, reemerge. I kind of feel like we are investigating maybe a homicide or some type of death investigation." Ruby said that she agrees that Alyssa was likely murdered and has slowly come to accept the fact that her sister may never receive justice. But she also wanted to make sure that everyone knows she's not ready to stop searching for answers. And good for her, because as we cover this case and we spread the word, we're not ready to stop fighting for answers either. So the family continued pushing for a complete investigation, and in December of 2014, it was announced that the Texas Rangers and the Texas Attorney General's office would join the investigation. Both agencies were tasked with reviewing the case files and using state resources to continue investigating Alyssa's disappearance. Approximately 8 months later, in August of 2025, Alyssa had been missing for 36 years. Her family made the painful decision to have Alyssa legally declared deceased, and a judge approved their request. The family also filed a lawsuit against the Aransas Pass Police Department, seeking to have investigators complete their search of the home and finally release the case files. And an agreement was eventually reached. Investigators would conduct one final search of the property, and if nothing was found, the case files would be released to the family. So, in February of 2026, state investigators searched the home again using technology similar to an MRI, allowing them to see beneath the house without excavation. And as the family long believed would happen, nothing was found. The search officially cleared Alyssa's family, and detectives stayed true to their word. They released the case files to the family and to the family investigator. Months later, in late June of 2026, in a surprising turn of events, the mayor of Aransas Pass publicly apologized to Alyssa's family, saying, quote, I wish to extend my sincere apologies to the Robeson family as well as close friends for what you have endured over the past years. And I mean that with all of my heart. And this is great. I don't know if the mayor was on when all of the initial stuff was happening, but to take accountability for his town, for his city, and to say, listen, we screwed up. And whether I was a part of that decision or I'm just coming on board now, what was done to you was wrong. And essentially, they re-victimized a family that had already been a victim of a horrific crime. And so to have to go through that on top of everything else, not knowing where your child or your loved one is, and then being accused of being the people responsible for that disappearance, it's just this nightmare that you can never wake up from. So kudos to the mayor for coming forward and making this public apology, letting everyone in that community know, hey, they did nothing wrong and we made the mistake. And so August 6, 2026, which is going to only be a few days away from when you see or listen to this episode, it's going to be 37 years since Alyssa disappeared. So to honor that date, Ruby and Marina are traveling from Idaho back to Arantes Pass to bring renewed attention to Alyssa's case. They plan to host a memorial walk, speak with the media, and meet with investigators to receive an update on the status of the investigation. And if you happen to have a chance to make it out there, if you're from that area, please stop by, show them your support, let them know that I sent you. Ruby also wanted me to pass along that she's been speaking with the Arantes Pass detectives, and so far, there's been some good dialogue. She's hoping that continues and that they can refocus on the main goal, which is finding Alyssa, because until she's found, the family will never stop fighting for answers. All right, so let's dive into this perspective. There's not a lot of theories in this case. I think there's more theories when it comes to the potential suspect or suspects. And so I want to start with the things that I don't think occurred here. I don't think the family, the immediate family, was involved. They've been cleared. They've gone through the mud. If there was something there, you would think detectives would have found it. I also don't think that Alyssa ran away. She had a good home. She was happy where she was. And in this moment, she was literally on her way to her friend's house and she was excited about it. So if she was going to run away, I don't think this was the time when she would have done it. And if she did attempt to run away, unless in some world she had someone waiting for her and this was all planned out, I think she would have been found by now. Somebody would have spotted her, and yet we have nothing. And so, yeah, I do believe at that intersection, something went down. And in my opinion, more than likely what happened was Alyssa was walking and a vehicle drove up and got the drop on her. They were either a friend or presented themselves as a friendly or gave the impression that they were in some type of distress, whether it was car trouble or in need of directions. And Alyssa, being a young teenage girl with a big heart, maybe got a little too close to the car and created an opportunity where the suspect or the suspect's counterpart was able to grab her and pull her into the vehicle. There's also a possibility that there was no physical force whatsoever. It could have been one person who drove right up to Alyssa, started a conversation, and as soon as she got close enough to the window, pointed a gun at her and told her to get in the car and not make a sound or he would kill her. And again, being young, not having a lot of experience and knowledge to go off of, unfortunately got into the vehicle. Now, in hindsight, if that's what happened, and I've told you guys this a million times, regardless of the risk, do not get into that vehicle. Do not go to that secondary location. Historically speaking, it never ends well. And so I think overall, regardless of the suspect, I do think that is the scenario we're looking at here, and we're going to go through it. So first off, and I'm going to start with, in my opinion, the most unlikely, and then we'll kind of go up from there. It would be a neighbor, a family member, or friend, like a Bob or Debbie. I can't rule out the possibility that the reason the vehicle was able to get so close to her or the reason she was willing to get inside was because she knew the person. And maybe she felt like either this person was going to take her to where she needed to be, or if you're to believe some people, and I know this is something that there's allegations out there about, that it was Bob. You know, Bob pulls up and says, hey, Debbie's right around the corner. Let me bring you over there. Do I think that's what happened? I honestly don't. It's a gut intuition. I can't say definitively, but that's not where I'm leaning. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It seems like Bob was still out. Maybe he wasn't at work anymore, and that's why they questioned him, because he didn't have a strong alibi. But what's the motive here? What's the motive? Why not let her get to the house? What's going on there? For me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And Bob would have had to have been gone for a reasonable amount of time. And I don't know what that window was. So maybe with more information, I would feel differently. But from what I've learned and from speaking with people involved with this case, it doesn't seem like Bob's high on the list any longer. And I'm glad to hear that. But then you also have to consider friends slash neighbors. When I talked about the map earlier, it's a residential neighborhood. There's a lot of people there who may not be best friends of Alyssa, but might be familiar faces that she's seen before. And she has a decent level of trust when it comes to them, because it's just a normal person that they've seen multiple times. And could someone like that, who has an underlying motive, right, and has seen Alyssa on multiple occasions and maybe been attracted to her and has seen her walk around by herself on certain occasions and was looking for an opportunity, could have been out that day driving around and happened to see Alyssa walking home, pulls up on her, and one of the various scenarios I just laid out to you, whether it was pulling her into the car, physically grabbing her and then taking her into the car, or gaining control with either a gun or a knife, any of those scenarios are possible, and it yet still could have been someone that she was familiar with, someone that she knew. And then finally, it could be a complete stranger. It could be someone who was just passing through the area or lived in the area, and even though they had seen Alyssa, she had never seen them. Or it could be someone who had never seen Alyssa before, but was looking for a victim of opportunity that Alyssa matched. It was the exact scenario, the exact description that this person had been looking for, and they had been lurking around in the area waiting for the opportunity. And so, yeah, they pull right up on her. And one of the scenarios that I laid out, whether it's saying, hey, do you know where such and such street is? Or, hey, my vehicle's in need of gas. Where's the closest gas station? Or, hey, have you seen this person? Or have you seen a dog? It could be a million things where, again, Alyssa being a teenage girl, not really expecting something like this, right? This is her neighborhood, walks up to the vehicle, trying to help, and before you know it, she's being dragged into the vehicle or being forced into the vehicle at gunpoint. And I know that I said I was going to go from least likely to most likely. That is my most likely scenario, that it was more than likely a stranger, someone who just was able to get close enough to her and it would only take seconds, right? She would just have to get close enough to the car where they were able to get out and say, hey, did you see this over here? It looks like someone just hit my car and took off. And she's going, what? And then before she even has a chance to register what's going on, she's being forced into the vehicle. Seconds. You know, there wouldn't be much of a struggle. And even if there was a struggle, the fact that no one heard or saw it doesn't mean it didn't happen. And that's what I was saying earlier when investigators had alluded to the fact that because there were no signs of struggle, therefore it had to be someone she knew. I'd be careful about that, because you're shrinking down your suspect pool without any real tangible evidence. And that could be a mistake, because when you do that, you could be ruling out the actual person we're looking for. So I would expand that scope and keep it wide, because the absence of evidence doesn't necessarily mean it's indicative of what happened. And that's where I'm at on this one. If you made me choose, I say more than likely, if we were to find out tomorrow what happened, it's probably someone who has no previous connection to Alyssa or her family. And I know some of you are probably screaming at your screen right now, because I said I was going from, you know, least likely to most likely, and I completely skipped over Ralph, but I'm going to double back to him now, because I felt like those two other scenarios kind of go hand in hand. Similar scenario, just with a different offender. And by the way, just to make sure I get it all in there, it also could be multiple offenders, where you could have a driver and a passenger, and it would be very easy at that point for them to gain control of a 13-year-old girl. So that's also in play here. But back to Ralph. I talked a lot about him in this episode, and for the reasons that I laid out in the case itself, yeah, he's a potential person that we'd want to look into. But what Ruby and Marina believe regarding the corruption and him being able to get out of the prison and go to this location without being seen by anyone in that moment, I can't say with 100% certainty that it's not possible, but it's highly unlikely. There's a variety of different things that would have to transpire here in order for this to be possible. And you would think that if he was in a Mexican prison and got all the way to Texas, at some point there would be something that would pick him up, either an eyewitness or a camera, something. And yet there's no evidence to substantiate the claim that even though he was registered to be in prison, he was somehow in Aransas Pass, Texas. That would be a story to tell. If that's what we end up learning happened here, we're going to really have to dissect that one to figure out how it all transpired, how it went down. How is that even possible? And so I'm mentioning it out of respect for the family, but also acknowledging that with this particular case, I think Occam's razor should be applied, with the most reasonable explanation being the most likely. So where does that leave us? Well, it's been 37 years, and I know I mentioned the Texas Rangers and new people coming on board. We need to start this investigation from scratch. New eyes, new ears, going through everything they have, including private investigators who now have access to the case files, and starting on page one and treating it like it happened yesterday. Re-interviewing everybody you can, rechecking alibis. Again, I know this is a lot of work, but this is what needs to be done. And then also seeing if there's anything now that can be applied that wasn't available when this originally happened. I don't think there's a lot of evidence with this case, so that might not be feasible, but I would also want to find out what evidence they allegedly found at the family home and see if there's something there that can be utilized, even though it's probably not connected to the family. So yes, go through everything. Look for similar cases in the area. Go back and look at maybe friends, family members, neighbors that were in the area at the time that may have committed crimes since that are in line with the person we might be looking for. I'm hoping that was done originally, and maybe there was nothing that popped in their background then, but it's been 37 years. And so maybe they have reoffended. Maybe they've moved to another place and committed a similar crime or attempted to commit a crime, but were unsuccessful. And that is someone you'd want to bring in and talk to again. And maybe by following that breadcrumb, it'll lead you to another breadcrumb, which could ultimately lead to Alyssa. And then to me, the most important variable in this particular case, like some of the other cases we cover, is you guys, the community, the people from that area. In my opinion, that's who's going to solve this case. It's going to be someone who is in that area at that time and saw something but didn't report it, saw something but didn't feel compelled for whatever reason to report it at the time, or who had a family member or friend or acquaintance who had displayed some suspicious behaviors before, during, and after Alyssa's disappearance, and for one reason or another, never reported it. There's still time to do so. You can still come forward. You can remain anonymous. You can do the right thing. You can finally provide answers to Alyssa's family. So, just to recap, 13-year-old Alyssa Roberson was last seen at approximately 5:45 p.m. on August 6, 1989, after leaving her home in Aransas Pass, Texas, to meet a friend at a nearby elementary school. Alyssa never arrived. Bloodhounds tracked her scent from her home to an intersection of 8th Street and Goodnight Avenue, where it abruptly ended. Despite decades of investigation, multiple searches, and renewed efforts by local, state, and federal agencies, Alyssa has never been found. If you have any information in Alyssa's case, please call the Texas Crime Stoppers hotline at 1-800-252-TIPS. That's 1-800-252-8477. There is a reward available. As always, my final words go out to the friends and family of Alyssa, her brothers. I'm thinking of you guys. I know you were younger, but I'm sure it's something where not a day goes by that you don't think about your sister. I also want to thank Ruby for volunteering her time and helping us fill in the blanks so that I could accurately tell this story. And then finally, I want to speak directly to Marina. I know that you hold a lot of guilt about what happened that day. But I can tell you, as a former detective and a parent myself, you did absolutely nothing wrong. The struggles that I have daily when I think about letting my daughter leave the house to go to a friend's house or to walk down the road to even just pick up something at the mailbox down the street. Every one of those decisions I make could result in tragedy. And I'm someone that people look to for advice for things like this. This is not your fault. The monster or monsters out there who took Alyssa, that's who's responsible for this. Not you. We can't keep our kids in a bubble. Your daughter was walking 6 minutes down the road to meet a friend. There's not a place in this country where we shouldn't be able to do that. You trusted Alyssa, rightfully so, and you did what 99% of the parents out there would do. We've all done it, and we've been lucky enough not to have happen what happened to you and your family. But this is not your fault. And I know that what I'm saying probably isn't going to make a difference, but you need to know that I'm fighting for you, and everyone who supports me is now fighting for you as well. I know it's been a long time. It's been too long. But I'm hoping now that a lot of these nightmare scenarios that we talked about, we're not even going to address them now. They're past us, right? We're focused on what really matters now, that maybe with some new eyes and ears and some new attention on this case, we can finally get you the answers you deserve. We need to find out who's responsible for what happened to Alyssa and hold them accountable. And I really hope that day happens sooner than later. But until then, please, everyone out there, stay safe, and I'll see you soon.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.